Okay, so I'm going to begin by introducing Carl Swenson, who is the 2014 writer-in-residence with the Catalana Review. She gave a workshop last Sunday. She's been doing manuscript consultations with writers through the week. The reading tonight, and then tomorrow at 11:30 at Catalana University, she will be part of a panel discussion that includes Mercedes M. and Colin Brown, if he recovers from his laryngitis. The topic is very, very broadly empire. Cole's visit was timed to coincide with TCR's languages issue, an issue of translations of a great variety of types. Cole seemed the perfect choice, one of the most interesting poets writing in English and a translator of very many books by contemporary experimental French poets. Cole also single-handedly runs a press that publishes living experimental French poets translated by writers in English, La Presse. But on the ground here in Vancouver, we found that Cole, the translator working in French, has been eclipsed by Cole, the poet writing in English. TCR chose to follow the lead created by the demand for a workshop in English. And by all accounts, it was a superb workshop. We'll wait for the languages issue to experience Cole in her translator persona. This is Cole's first invitation to read in Vancouver. It seems a little surprising to me. I remember Joan Metallic saying after KSW invited her a few years ago that she feared they'd never ever get around to it. She had said that no experimental poet in the US could feel truly recognized without the invitation to Vancouver. I'm happy to say that Cole is here and all without solicitation or complaint on her part. Cole teaches in the Literary Arts program at Brown University. She has many books in English behind her name, a collection of critical essays titled Noise That Stays Noise, great title. She's the co-editor of a Norton anthology titled American Hybrid, and she has written many wonderful books of poetry in English, the most recent being The Glass Age, Hours, Greensod, and Gravesend. All are project-based books. Ours is my particular favorite, a portrait of the 17th century French garden and the famed gardener to the aristocracy, Le Nôtre. Le Nôtre, of course, translates as ours, the title of the book, and Cole makes much ironic play with notions of ownership and collective belonging. The book lays out Enlightenment concepts of nature, geometry, perspective, subject positioning, all contributing to the portrait of Le Nôtre, himself a product of singular perspective. Cole's work is truly a rewarding read, and the Catalana Review could not be more delighted to be hosting her and introducing her to Vancouver's poets, readers, and listeners. Cole.
Thank you very much, Tammy, and thank you above all for the invitation. It's been wonderful to be here, and furthermore, I've been put up in the most gorgeous spot in the world, which is the Sylvia Hotel. So I take long walks every day. The first day I was here, I went out for a long walk along the seawall and was paralleled by an otter that was about this long, was swimming along as I was walking along. And then I also saw a flock of about 25, I tried to count them, but 25 blue herons. It's like an amazing thing. I thought, gee, I like it here. the PDF, what am I saying, the PowerPoint, is that a possibility? Yes, here it is. Okay, I'm going to start by reading from a book that I just finished, that is called Landscapes from a Train, and it's exactly that. It's landscapes both photographed from trains and landscapes written from trains, and the two kind of parallel each other. I ended up with just thousands and thousands of photographs, and they're mostly of trees, from trains. And I was very pleased to hear that the American Railway Service, known as Amtrak, has recently instituted a writer's residency. You can apply and get a writer's residency to go long distance on Amtrak and write. So what we'll do is there are two sections per slide. So if I, when I do this, perhaps the slide can change. Light keeps up, light touch on building, light builds on the inside of the window, cut and form. Most colors amount to this without names. It happens in some, and there is little else. A lake folds, and so holds sky, at which a tower stood and now stands older than higher, through which it rises all round its ruined farm. And orchard on, trees count, one more house fallen down goes falling on, one more canal the size of a thumb, and the singular way that trees take over a meadow, all that walking, all it calls, I heard something call, one, if animal, and horses once more, a plain cut by a rivulet, a house stands alone in a field. A white cow stands alone in a field. A white horse stands alone among trees. A line of trees stands alone in sheaves of green as the eye strikes a far thing, a thing at this distance becomes distance alive all alone. Cows turn to crows in a field alone. Dovecot, gray and wind, now mill, now wall, in the hedgerows, a birdhouse. All the hares are facing east, and the cows walking left between. Five men building a stone wall. Stones the size of hands and shape. The hands and the stones are equal parts of the wall. Slip of line in roads through trees, cut into lives. In the rupture of an aqueduct, the light yet moves. Chateau gray with the aviary buttered on, ruptured in, caught abroad in a slip that brings the sky back down to the ground. Light slices across the tops of trees. White light cuts the presence back, the lack thereof. Light replaced, the light that is a touch, that we cannot see the light enter the cells of the trees, nor what leads the path down to the cells below the trees. Pale bond, grain runs, embarks upon, it's mostly rain, and we pass on, past a tossing road through a stand of hay, stand among graves. Stand trees in a line migrating through rain. The rain first a green and then a form. Six or seven buildings and their six or seven bare trees beneath a large white house in a hurl of green. In its pillar at a distance, clicking up stillness, the roof of sky that makes the sky turn slate into suddenly birds, solid birds holding on to the sky. The distance will live all the trees into rooms. All the room in trees grates the winter to edges. One tree in winter comes all winter to pieces, very fine pieces that fall from sky to sky, sharpening the sky. And I'm going to read next some poems from a book that came out a couple years ago, 2012, called Gravesend. And I'm going to read a couple poems that that are about the town of Gravesend, and they're in some way directly related to the panel discussion tomorrow on imperialism. And in a sense, the book was written beginning in 2003 when the United States invaded Iraq. And I was thinking a lot, for the second time, and I was thinking a lot about that as a kind of imperialist gesture that was hiding under a different kind of agenda. And so I wanted to go back and kind of think about imperialism in earlier contexts. And I was also really interested in ghosts and in the fact that any invasion of a people, depending on how you understand ghosts, involves the creating of ghosts. It involves creating and killing. And if ghosts have to do with dead people, then invading a country certainly creates lots of ghosts. And I was also thinking of ghosts as being a kind of communal manifestation, a manifestation of communal grief and communal guilt that can't be owned, actually, or won't be owned by any individual. And so how does that emerge in a society? And the ghost as a manifestation of that otherwise unaddressable and unmanifestationable event. Gravesend. And Gravesend is a town right at where the Thames River joins the channel. Gravesend. My ended grove, my threaded shriek, drawn along by swans straining at the same. Did you fall off the edge, and which home carved from an egg? As if a little trap door slowly spread through every room, ever this ready, the dead are hauling a circus behind them in flames. Gravesend. Gravesend is named after Mr. Sylvanus Grave, who, in 1123, opened a store here at the end of the road leading from London to the sea. No, London does not go to the sea. So Gravesend is named after Mr. Albert Graves, who established a hotel at the first point that boats turned in from the channel to go up the Thames. No, he is dead. And Gravesend is named for a preacher, Euphonius Grave by name, who fell off a cliff one night at just this spot. There are those who say the waves carried him off ablaze. They are wrong. Once we dreamt that a grave had an end, that a life didn't just keep on growing and growing until the grave stretched from here to its clearance. No, a grave is a grievance. From the 17th through the 19th centuries, Gravesend was a principal harbor from which emigrants left England for Australia or North or South America, South Africa, and India. It was a door through which people fell into the sea. I never returned. Gravesend swings back and forth like a window in the wind. It is named for the fact that you never returned. It bears the name of a man who disappeared in plain sight in the town square on a sunny day. Gravesend. The name Gravesend comes from the words Grafsham, meaning the place at the end of the grove. Is a nave, is you walking out into the sun, and the trees surround the things left behind. A grave clears the air. Gravesend is recorded in the Domesday Book, 1086, called Gravesham, which meant the home of a reeve or a lord, of a sleeve or a word, of a team headed toward, the sill of a window or a door. Gravesend is so named because at the height of the plague, they brought the bodies out here and threw them into the sea. It wasn't as callous as it sounds, for by then the grove was over and the sleeve a town, and someone had learned how to fashion a deadbolt from a series of thumbs. And so we dream to the sound, the slip, the click, the something that won't ever quite shut. They blame the plague, the heart, the age. A grave is a door laid flat in the earth, worked into a hinge, which articulates a gulf without being a bridge. And one of the curious things Gravesend is just full of irony, and one, to me, of the most ironic events was that Pocahontas died there, and I'll talk a lot about that tomorrow, but in a certain way, Pocahontas was the first Native American who ever went to Europe voluntarily. And obviously, many, many people, in fact, they think from DNA evidence that as early as the Viking raids in the 8th and 9th century, that that there were Native Americans captured and taken back. And there were many Native Americans enslaved from the first Southern European interventions on. But it seems from all anyone can gather that Pocahontas was the first one who had a sense of agency about it, who said, I'd like to go visit there. So, and by that time, she was married to an Englishman, had changed her religion, she was now a Christian, and had changed her name, and was now Rebecca Rolfe. But that didn't help her immunity, and her immune system, which didn't have the, it wasn't developed, so she didn't have the immunity to all the English diseases. Pocahontas, 1595, Powhatan Confederacy, to 1616, Gravesend, England. So Pocahontas, lost in the graveyard, said to her husband, so stolen, the new world is an edge, and returning, she turned around and saw him becoming someone who used to live where she was dying. Pocahontas once threw herself on the body of Captain John Smith to save him, then married his colleague, John Rolfe, a few years later. From the 17th to the 19th centuries, thousands and thousands of ships. Is a windmill or a threshold, a guild hall or sword hilt? Is a windowsill struck by lightning, the huge sails billowing out and the curtains? I'm at that stage in life, and then all that dancing on water. Pocahontas died in Gravesend at the age of 22. She was there to catch a boat back to Virginia with her husband and child who were going home. So Pocahontas lost in the graveyard a small charm that once depended from a chain around her ankle is no way to figure the cost to her eyesight, to her continually flagrant insistence upon dying as a demonstration of the central role of irony in history. After all, that departure, the first Native American ever to visit Europe, stayed forever. A fire in 1727 destroyed the parish records, which included the location of Pocahontas's grave. By nature, a door is a gap, but a ceiling wouldn't be offered in pieces or things that can't be divided. One cannot, for instance, offer another a piece of grief or of survival. Thank you.